Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Wednesday night edition of Talking Sports. Don Henderson here, and we've got a host of guests to talk to this evening. A lot of great sports news on the docket, and we'll get to all that in just a couple of moments. Roy Cummings is in Tampa, Florida. He'll join us first. Steve Casella will be number two. Trevor Bosco will be number three. Mike Zimczak will be number four. And Doug will be down in Baltimore, Washington. And he'll be number five, our PGA professional. A lot of golf to talk about at the end of the show tonight. Some quick headlines before we go down to Tampa and Roy Cummings. The Philadelphia Phillies played to a 7-7 tie. Looked like they had the game won in the eighth inning, but they gave up a two-run home run and a tying run in the ninth. The game was called at the end of nine innings, as always, for exhibition baseball. And it wound up at 7-7. Unusual yesterday. There were four tied games yesterday. And all of them, of course, ended in – it's up to the two managers if they want to go on, but in nine times out of ten, they do not. The New York Mets won a game this afternoon, 3-0 over the St. Louis Cardinals. Toronto beat Tampa 3-2. And the Baltimore Orioles had a big day with the bats today. They scored 12 runs, and they won down in beating Minnesota by a score of 12-3. But let's get on to Roy Cummings. First of all, Roy, your boy finally got signed. You got one guy for, $20 million, $20 million, and an option on the other year. Three consecutive options. Bellinger signs yesterday with the Chicago Cubs once again.
Yeah, arguably, well, after Shohei Ohtani, I would say arguably the biggest signing of the offseason, probably, the free agency period in baseball. And Cody Bellinger ended up where certainly Cubs fans wanted him to be. The market kind of dried up, which was interesting how that happened. I think that was a bit of a surprise to a lot of people, is how the market really kind of dried up. And you could look around at other teams and see that they were, you know, making other moves. And here's the thing. I mean, Cody Bellinger coming off of what? One great season, for sure. But prior to that, you know, two very difficult seasons. Granted, he's a former MVP. He's a former Rookie of the Year. But he had a couple of real tough seasons there with L.A. before he went to Chicago. And so you could see why there was some hesitancy to sign him. The deal he signed is starting to become not standard in Major League Baseball, but it's a couple of other guys have signed similar deals where they basically, maintain their ability to be free agents, kind of prove that they're better than they're at least as good as the season they're coming off of. And so especially with Scott Boras, I mean, he's become kind of, you know, he's thrown out a few players out there on these, you know, 2 and 3 year deals with the player opt out after the first and second year. So I won't be surprised if we see more of that going forward. But now you're looking at Blake Snell, see what happens with him, and we kind of get the ball rolling. That's pretty much the – and Jordan Montgomery as well, but still got a couple of other free agents out there. But slowly but surely, the free agents are finding homes now.
Yeah, Cody got 3 years, but he can opt out after each one. So it's not really a three-year contract. It's the deal that he and Boras worked out with his with the ball club, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens. You mentioned Blake Snell just a moment ago, a former MVP, and, of course, pitcher we know well right there in Tampa. You saw him many times, Roy, and, of course, then went out to San Diego, MVP again. And but he has yet to sign. He's looking – they said yesterday they thought he was going to sign with Boston. It didn't happen. It didn't happen with the New York Mets. They were trying to make a deal, but they haven't been able to get Boras down to what number they want. And you look at the other members of the free agent market, J.D. Martin out there, four-time Gold Glover, and he's standing on the sidelines. The player I can't believe is Matt Chapman. What a great third baseman, great player, played for Toronto, two-time All-Star player and an outstanding player. Tim Anderson did sign, and left-hander Jordan Montgomery, as you just mentioned, yesterday he was going to go to the Red Sox, and that blew up last night, and he didn't sign with the Red Sox. So, fellas, we got a lot of players out there with a lot of credentials, but, Roger, they're not doing much signing.
Well, one of the reasons is that Scott Boras represents a number of them, and he's asking for too much money. And he thinks they're valued at more than, obviously, what teams do. But, I saw one article today that the Phillies may make a blockbuster trade with the Astros. They would give up one of their prized prospects for I forget the guy. I just saw it this afternoon. It was, I was coming from school. And, Scott Boras, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he just has got to be the most powerful man in baseball. The nerve to ask, for an increase in time when contracts, it's ridiculous. I mean, I think he's bad for baseball, but, who am I? I'm a baseball traditionalist.
Well, let's go back to Tampa for a minute because the other problem is that a lot of, the Rays, it seems to say something crops up each and every year, and this year, very unusual. And Roy Franco is so entwined now with this legal matter down in the Dominican. It's a matter of whether the guy who's an all-star, who's probably the, if not the best player, the second best player on the Rays, and he doesn't look like he's going to be able to play at all, much less you know, get back for maybe half the season or something. It's going to be a long legal battle, looks like.
Yeah, you're right. And, boy, what a sad story. You know, and look, this I thought, you know, way back when the Rays made the move with Willie Adames, I thought it was a mistake. And not that anyone could possibly foresee what has happened with Willie Adames. I'm sorry, with Wander Franco, but you had two very, very good ball players there, two tremendous middle infielders, both exquisite defensively, both with power bats, and just, you know, really rare talents. And I really thought, and under team control, and I thought that the smartest thing that the Rays could have done at that point was to hold on to Willie Adames and Wander Franco, find a place for them both to play. You've always got the DH option. See if one can play second. We'll see if one can play third, possibly. See if anybody could play in the outfield. Keep those bats around and just, you know, double down on that kind of talent. They didn't do it, and now I think they're kind of paying a price for it. I mean, they've got some options at shortstop, the Rays. They always do seem to come up with players. But, look, this was the crown jewel of this particular edition of the Rays. This was the player that they were building around. They didn't expect Randy Arozarena to be the player that he's become. They expected Wander Franco to be the player that he was and possibly still is. But, you know, my guess is we may never see Wander Franco in a Major League Baseball uniform again. And, again, I don't feel sorry for the Rays for what's happened. I mean, this is kind of – it's just what happens. But, again, I think they could have protected themselves at least against the loss of the talent by holding on to both Franco and Adames. And now it's just – I mean, it's hard to make out what the Rays will be without him. Such an important bat to them. They're a team that always finds a way, no doubt about that. But at the end of the day, it's just it's a tough situation that the Rays are in. And again, nobody could have seen it coming. But I think there was a way to have protected yourself against this kind of a loss or any kind of a loss of Wander Franco, whether it was an injury or some other issue. And it's a tough spot for sure. And you're right. I'm not sure we're ever going to see him in a major league uniform again.
And, Roger, we're now in a situation, even though you're down in Atlanta, we'll get to the Atlanta situation in just a couple of seconds, but, you know, it's now really an entanglement between the violation from a sex offender to the fact that they're saying he was transporting illegal drugs involved with a 14-year-old girl. It's not just a one-dimensional case, and he's also hooked up and has been hooked up in transporting judge for a drugs, I should say, for a carrier down there. So, boy, I'll tell you, I think it's going to be a long battle.
Well, I agree with something like that, and it's extensive and widespread as it is. There's no doubt about it. I mean, but my opinion, a guy like him that has the potential and the opportunity to do something as stupid as he did, and not expecting to get caught sooner or later. And, I mean, just flipping over to hockey on a much lesser scale situation with Carter Hart with a sexual abuse. And, we, you know, don't expect to see him ever play in the Flyers at least again. So, you know, these situations now are getting more expensive. We saw them a lot in the NFL, you know, over not drugs necessarily, but, you know, sexual. But now it's, you know, it's spread to every part of our life, every league, every different sport.
Roy, as we delve forward, what do you see the Rays doing right now? I mean, they've got and have made a minor trade for I guess you could call more than a backup infielder, but he'll be a little bit of an insurance policy from an infield standpoint a week ago. But other than that, they've really got to come up with some ideas this year.
Well, they do. Again, you know, they are a deep team in the minor league. So it's not like they're destitute here. I mean, they do have Jose Caballero, who played for him a little bit last year. He's certainly not going to hit for the average that Wander Franco did, or for the power. But he's a decent fill in. So you've got that, and you've got a couple other pieces. They do have a fairly good bench. Ahmed Rosario is, that's a darn good baseball player right there. I mean, that guy can carry you. Well, he can't carry you, but he can certainly, fill the void here. So that's really what they're doing, is they're just, at this point, they're just looking to fill the void. I mean, they're going to have to completely rethink this approach, and what they're going to do with this position, and we'll see where it takes them. But at least for now, I mean, I think they can make it work. The problem is that it puts more pressure on other players to produce at a high level. We'll see how that works out for them. But they do have some depth. Another guy in the minors, Junior Cannonero, but nobody measures up all in one piece to Wander Franco. And here's the interesting thing, guys, and I don't know if they want to do this, you hear through the grapevine that Willy Adames is available through trade from the Brewers. I think the Brewers would make a move there. Seems like the Brewers decided to kind of, maybe shuffle the, reshuffle the deck there a little bit. Corbin Burns is gone. Obviously Craig Counsell's out of the manager's spot. So this could be a time when they decide to shuffle the deck a little bit. So if Tampa wants, they're going to have to give up a prospect or two. But they could get Willy Adames back, and you could do a lot worse. Again, tremendous defense, power bat, which they could use. Won't get the batting average maybe that you got from Franco, but still, I think to me that sounds like a pretty good option. Although they've already made the move for Rosario, so we'll see what happens. But if you still want to stay young at that position and dynamic, you could do a lot worse than Willy Adames.
Well, before we get off the baseball front, Roger, you're in Atlanta now, but a lifelong Philadelphian, and Phillies, by the way, are going to be on at 1 o'clock tomorrow on Major League Baseball. If you're available, even though I know you're teaching now, so you might not be able to see them. I felt a little bit today, but I did see Yamamoto pitch today for the first time. A young man, $200 million out of Japan, and was a strike between the Mets and whether he was going to go to the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers were on this afternoon. Saw him pitch a couple of innings. It was funny because had great stuff. He only pitched a couple of innings and had great breaking ball, pretty good fastball, used three pitches. He said on his interview after the game that he used three pitches during the course of the game. And I don't know if either one of you two had a chance to see him. If you did, comment.
Well, go ahead, Roy. I did not, but I did want to say, talking about the Brewers, they signed Rhys Hoskins, and I saw that Rob Thompson was asked, I think, by Howard Eskin whether the Phillies were a better team with Hoskins at first base and Harper in right field than they are now, and he said, yes, they were. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, Howard said that on the show last week.
Yeah, I did not see I did not see the game today, so I did not see the pitcher throw. But look, everything we hear is that this is an elite level pitcher, and look, it just seems for the most part that pitchers coming out of Japan do a little bit better than the hitters coming out of Japan. Not exactly sure why that is. It just seems like most of the pitchers have a hard time, or the hitters rather, have a hard time catching up to the fastball. And I think probably because they don't quite, not all the pitchers in Japan have that 98 plus, heat coming. They have to be a little bit more crafty. This pitcher, it's a mix of all that. So he's, the scouting report is glowing. Anxious to see him pitch when it really matters. The thing about spring training, it's very hard to judge. is that, you know, everybody's working on something. You know, pitchers are trying to work on, a lot of times trying to work on a new pitch. They're trying to, you know, just get themselves comfortable. It's very hard to really read anything into any of the results you get. But, you know, opportunity to see him throw is always exciting. I wish I had seen it, but I hadn't. I didn't.
Well, the fun thing about the game was at the end of the second inning, I think he struck this last batter out, if I'm not mistaken. But what he did was he turned around to walk back out towards second base. And his teammates in the dugout said, "Hey, there's three outs. We only give three outs in the major league." And you don't normally see an Oriental player laugh or smile at himself. But he turned right head toward the dugout, and his buddy from Japan was all over him, not knowing there were three outs in the inning. But it was sort of funny to see.
Well, I've got a question for both of you. How is it that this situation with the Rays, that it surfaces like at the beginning of spring training? How is it allowed to go that far?
Roger, it didn't. It surfaced last year. Willie Adames, Juan DeFranco's been off the Rays for, he missed a good chunk of the end of last season.
Almost half the season.
This goes back a year ago.
And they weren't able to settle, obviously, during the offseason.
They keep finding, violations, laws that he broke. You've got the relationship with the 14-year-old girl. You got the payments to the mother. You've got some possible, trafficking going on now, some drug trafficking possibly. So there's an awful lot there. But the tip of the iceberg was exposed or seen last year, late last season.
No question about it. The Rays certainly knew all during the offseason. They thought, obviously, you always think he had two different lawyers. One lawyer only stayed with him for like 5 weeks or 4 weeks or so, a very short period of time, and he dropped out. Once the drug things came in, he dropped out because this is one of the guys that was some type of official down there was also involved in the drug. So it's really a big mix-up. We'll just have to wait and see where it goes from here, but tremendous loss. And he had just signed, I'm not exactly sure the exact number, I think it was 9 years for almost $100 million, wasn't it, Roy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he signed a big contract, and the Rays went all in on Juan DeFranco, and rightfully so. I mean, look, when he first came up, a bit of a struggle right out of the box for about a week and a half maybe, but then he got comfortable pretty quickly after that and found his groove, and he's been wowing people on the field ever since. Unfortunately, he's been a big disappointment off the field. So it's again, horribly unfortunate for everybody involved in this. But it's just, I'll tell you what, it lends some credence to the theory that you really have to kind of keep look after these guys and know everything that's going on in their lives before you, you could also suggest that the Rays, it's like before you signed them, clearly they had no hint of this, but perhaps they should have, you can't micromanage these guys to the point where you're investigating every aspect of their private life. But boy, oh boy, before you invest, $300 million in a player, you might want to be careful about it. You might want to be sure of what you're investing in.
And at the same time, this is not something that just cropped up over the last year. And from all accounts, this young lady who's been 13, I guess, at that time, 14 when the charges were levied. But, well, enough of that story. That's all we can do is just talk about it and hope that somewhere he comes along. Let's go to your bailiwick, the National Hockey League, because boy, are we having some fun right now in the National Hockey League. The Rangers are playing great. They just had a 10-game win streak broken, matched three times in the career, in the history of the Rangers, that they won 10 in a row. Then they wound up losing to a lesser team on Sunday night. But the Rangers are red hot. The Islanders are backing their way out. They're now 6 points, I think, back of any kind of a playoff position. And they're really struggling. So, Roy, the Lightning, give us your observation on the Lightning first.
Yeah, a weird week for the Lightning, really. At home for three games and just looked horrible, horrible. Outscored like, 18-6 or something. Just got almost embarrassed at home. But then they go on the road and they win a couple of big ones. And then they get beat up last night in Philadelphia, which right now that – and there's no shame in that because not the way the Flyers are playing right now. But Tampa is they're fortunate because they're in a conference that's not too deep, and I think they're going to still be okay. I think they're going to be all right. I think they'll probably still make the playoffs. Obviously, there's a ways to go there, but at the end of the day, I still think they're good enough to get there despite what some of the struggles that they've had of late. But to me, the story of the Eastern Conference, as much as the Rangers are a tremendous story, it's the Flyers. I mean, this team has clearly outplayed expectations this year, and I think they're quickly finding out that the marriage with John Tortorella is really working out well. The players are buying in, as we've talked about before. They've lost their goaltender, as Roger alluded to earlier, Carter Hart out as a result of the sexual assault allegations against him and the other players from the World Junior Hockey Team from several years ago. But at the end of the day, they think that this kid Ersan can be a number one as well, and they're trying to find out, and they're going to give him every opportunity to prove himself as a number one, and so far he's doing the job, no doubt about it. So they are a tremendous story right now, and so are the in the other conference, so are the Oilers, who have played themselves back into a playoff spot. And, after just a horrible start for them. So a lot of interesting stuff going on, obviously, in the National Hockey League. It's been a great season, and it's going to come down to the wire for several teams, obviously. It's going to be interesting all the way through.
Roger, we'll let you get the last question in for Roy. Billy Wardell is standing by, so we'll go to Billy after you get this question out of your mind.
Well, Roy, you had a great point about what you have to do today as teams to monitor the lifestyle of players. And a lot going on at the Combine, and that's what a lot of the discussion is, how they have to investigate very deeply into prospects before they pull the cord, because they just don't know. Things surface at the last minute or after they've drafted a player, and here, and that's exactly what we have with DeFranco.
Yeah, it's a fine line that has to be written there. But at the end of the day, this, it just likely means that you're going to see more attempts by teams to keep an eye on players off the field and what they're up to. And, you don't want to have to do it. But, again, before you invest a whole bunch of money in a guy, you better be sure of what's going on in his private life. Bowers with the Jake Bauer with the Dodgers several years ago. I mean, there's another example. You think you've got a guy and you think he's going to be part of your team for years to come, and you're ready to pay him, a premium wage. And then you find out there's something, there's a skeleton in the closet. So, financially it doesn't hurt the teams, and I'll leave you guys with this. Financially it doesn't hurt you because you've got insurance against this kind of thing. But at the end of the day, when you build your pitching staff around a guy, you build your team around a guy, no matter the sport, you got to be sure about what's going on in their private life. So kind of opens up a whole new, can of worms here for teams that they've got to look after here.
Yeah, Roy, thank you very much, as always, and we'll get together
week,
next
Roy.
Week.
Thanks for having
Billy
me.
Billy Wardell is on the line right now, the number one sportscaster in Philadelphia at this moment. Billy's got more awards and more travel miles. He's got more travel miles than the President of the United States. Billy Wardell, welcome to the show once again. Let me do one other thing before I always let you give your pattern at the end of our conversation. Give your pattern at the beginning, and we'll do it at the end, too. If somebody has a pencil, they want to write it down, then I'll listen to you anywhere around the world.
WCAT 95.3 on the FM dial, WCAT 1520 on the AM dial, 95.3WCAT.com, streaming worldwide. And you always can follow me on Twitter, the Wardell, W-E-R-N-D-L. Gentlemen, start your engines.
Hey,
yeah,
Billy. And also WBCB. Got it. Can't forget that.
Yep.
Billy, you just heard the end of that conversation. Nobody knows the players coming in better than you do, or the players that are about to be moved in the National Football League. So let's start with football for a moment, and your observations, number one, on the Eagles, and then we'll go to what you think the combine is looking for.
Well, Don, the Eagles are an interesting story right now. Can Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni right the ship, get them back in the playoffs? They're in a weak division. I mean, Dallas is Dallas. You don't know what the Giants are going to do if Daniel Jones comes back. The Commanders have a new coach, and they want to move forward. But the situation that really bothered me was a complete collapse down the stretch by the Philadelphia Eagles. And that was mind-boggling to me. And you look at it from an offense and defensive standpoint. I mean, defense is being called on the carpet, yes. But the offense also struggled as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors for the Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni to address this offseason in free agency, trade, and the draft. And I don't think you put Humpty Dumpty back together again in one offseason.
Roger?
Well, the question is, can Jalen Hurts come back? And I think that's even the biggest question. What's your opinion about that, Bill?
I think Jalen Hurts had a down year. He did not play to the capabilities he did the year before when he led the team to the Super Bowl. They unfortunately lost to Kansas City. I mean, he's still a good quarterback. I mean, he has a new offensive coordinator with Kellen Moore. I mean, now this is a very important year for Jalen Hurts. It's now time to put up numbers that you're capable of. I mean, a lot of people were dissecting the way he acted on the sideline, the way he didn't pick up the blitzes. There was a lot of factors. But I'm going to say he leveled off or regressed to a certain extent, just like a hitter in baseball. He'll have an off year. If you go back and adjust, he'll be fine. But it's very important for Jalen. He works very hard. But now the microscope is on him even more this year than it was 2 years ago coming into 2023. They thought he would continue to move up the ladder. He had a subpar year, turned the ball over 21 times, but he still made some big plays for him. And they were 10-1 at one juncture, and the wheels came completely off the train.
Billy, as we look ahead, especially at the Eagles, first of all, how do they stand against the cap? Number two, what do we look for in terms of what are they looking for at the scouting combine? And number three, who's going to exit because of too much money? They have to pay too much money for a particular player.
Bye. Kevin Byard, their safety they obtained from Tennessee during the season, I don't think he will be back. They're talking about Bradbury coming back, but he has a tremendous cap hit, I think $17 million. Now, they got a break because they got real – the NFL increased the salary cap by $30 million. So they
right.
did get a break in that area. So they have some flexibility now. But they have other contracts they got to address down the road. Devontae Smith, Landon Dickerson. Both those guys will be looking for big contracts after next year. The Eagles have to address those situations because both are very key components for the Philadelphia Eagles. At the combine, they've got to look at cornerback, linebackers, safety, and offensive linemen. Remember, Lane Johnson and Jason Kelce are getting a little long in the tooth, and they've got to replace those guys. So they've got to be looking at those four positions very, very closely. have to look at another wide receiver to complement A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And, of course, who's going to be the running back? Are they going to bring DeAndre Swift back? Are they going to look at another area? Remember, there's going to be a glut of running backs in the free agent market this year. I think I counted as many as 7 guys, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs. You could have Eckler from the Chargers. There's going to be a glut, Saquon Barkley. There's going to be a glut of running backs on the market. So the Eagles have to determine how much they're going to play if they want to bring DeAndre Swift back, how much they're going to pay him, because they've never shown the propensity to spend a lot of money on running backs.
Roger? Well, yeah, that's a good point, because you're exactly right, and they've never did much drafting of linebackers. And, in your opinion, will they sign Swift? Or do you think that they will take a linebacker? I was thinking like in the second round.
Roger, 2 very good questions. I think Swift is probably their number one priority. I think they'll try to get something done with him. They know there's a Swift agent. There's a glut of free agent running backs. I think they could work something out there. Will they take a linebacker in the second round? Strong possibility. 4 names, Peyton Wilson out of North Carolina State, Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M, are 2 guys that could be targeted by the Eagles in the second round. So they're the type of players that could come in. Jeremiah Trotter's son, who played at Clemson, is a possibility as well. So those 3 guys are possibilities in the second round for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Billy, you touched on where they stand for the cap. Right now, the Eagles stand at $19 million, and so do the Giants. Giants and Eagles were exactly the same pot in their division, in their conference and division, whereas Washington is a grand slam. They've got $74 million for Quinn and the general manager to work with. So 3 teams within the conference itself have a lot of money to spend, and they have a lot of interest to get players to go to it.
And you mentioned $74 million for the Commanders. They've got to address the quarterback situation. That was deplorable last couple of years. So they're picking number 2. Do they take a kid like Jaden Daniels at number 2? Or they go out and try to get a veteran like a Kirk Cousins in that area? I mean, Washington could be, they have draft picks. They traded Montez Sweat to Chicago. They have an additional second-round pick. So Washington is in very good shape, and they could go from a tail-ender to a contender for a playoff spot next year. So, I mean, if they make the right decisions, they could be in a very good position, Donald.
Roger? Well, you're right. And the question is, will they? Do they have the right people?
Well, I think certainly with Daniel Snyder out of the picture.
They got
new ownership with Joshua Harris, the Sixers owner, and also the Devils owner. There's a new attitude down in Washington. Of course, they're looking for a new stadium down there. So, I mean, there's a new attitude in Washington. And again, the fans in Washington have been very frustrated during the Daniel Snyder administration. This guy had no right running a franchise, and he ran that franchise right in the ground.
Hey, Billy, my last question to you is that, I'm a big Quinn fan. I was a Quinn fan when he was with Atlanta. I'm still a Quinn fan, even though he swung around to an offensive and defensive with the Dallas Cowboys and all the rest. But the other thing, and I never disagree with you, but in this one I'm going to, I don't think that quarterback of Washington from North Carolina is that bad. If you give him a little support on the offensive line and give him a little time, he can run the ball, he can throw the ball.
He is not bad, but you have to ask yourself this question. Can he become a franchise quarterback? That's the big question. Do you think, Don Henderson, do you think Sam Howell can be a franchise quarterback in this league?
I like him. I do. I got to say, I like him at North Carolina.
Well,
I like him
fast, Don, so. I'm not going to argue with you. And I'm going to tell you another thing that I really found very interesting. We'll digress a little bit from football to baseball. I had Jim Cott on the air today, and Jim Cott was just inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And he made such a great statement about how they prepare pitchers for the season. You know, the pitchers down in spring training are full bore right now. Back in the day, they worked their way up as far as speed and velocity and all that.
Right.
Today,
right.
They're throwing the ball 100 miles an hour in the first and second spring training game. Absolutely absurd. And they have ruined so many pitchers over the years. Look at the team down in your area, Tampa Bay. 44 pitchers last year, Don. 44. The 1963 Yankees used 13 pitchers. 13 pitchers in all. So, I mean, you know, and Jim Cott took 25 years in the big league. His arm didn't fall off.
But it took him a long time to get to the Hall of Fame, unjustified, to be honest with you. He should have been in the Hall of Fame way before getting in last year. Well, let me get back to Roger and keep going, Roger. Well, we got to go to baseball anyway. We talk a little bit about the Phillies and so forth. Billy, Roger, you pick it up.
Well, the one thing that the Phillies didn't get any damage in that collision where a car went into the back of the bus. You know, you hear about something like that, and you worry that it could have been serious. But that was good news. But that's a good point, Bill, about these pitchers. And did you see the story today? They may make a deal with Houston and give up one of their prized prospects.
I did not see that. Are they going to give up the Crawford kid?
It's the Crawford kid or maybe Abel. Somebody or
I don't
both.
Have a problem with Abel, but I do have a problem with Crawford.
I do
Crawford
too.
Crawford is an outstanding pitcher, and they're getting the starting pitcher that gave them all kind of trouble in the World Series. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. You're right. Yeah.
I mean, Crawford is a mistake if they do that.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you know what? That's going to be another deal. Like Ryan Sandberg, when he went to the Cubs and became a Hall of Famer.
Larry Boa.
Larry
took Larry took him to the World Series. Remember, he went to the Padres. They were up 2-0. And when he was traded from the Phillies to Chicago, and as he said many times on this show, I kept telling him on a plane going out there, boys, it's not over. But it was over. It was over for the Cubs. They lost 3 in a row.
Hey, listen,
like
the 83
Yogi Berra said, it's not over till it's over, Donnie.
So it's over.
You got that right. Well, give us your evaluation of the Phillies right now if they don't make a major trade. And it doesn't look like they're in the market for the two primary pitchers, one being the Red Sox, one being the Mets. We'll just have to wait to see if Boris brings down the price a little bit. But how do you see the Phillies pitching staff? And, of course, their bullpen imploded again today when they were hit.
They have five starters right now. I mean,
right.
Nola, Wheeler, Suarez, Taiwan Walker, and, of course, Sanchez. And you mentioned Abel. Is he a guy that's going to be able to step it up? I mean, they've got some other guys in the spring training they're going to take a look at. I think, you know, you have to kick the tires on deals. I mean, I heard the name Kenley Jansen as a possible player in the bullpen. I'm not sold on Kenley Jansen.
No, me neither.
I is 36 years old. He scares the hell out of me. I mean, I like to get the pitcher from Houston, but I don't want to give up Crawford. I mean, again, you're not going to be able to breeze through a season with five starters, especially the way they play the game today. So as hard as you can, as long as you can. Absolute stupidity. And these people that are running baseball today, these analytics people, that the owners should be embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed, to have these guys up there with their numbers saying, oh, you know, with spin rate, velocity is very important. No. The way a pitcher develops, he becomes a pitcher. There's been many throwers over the years. We can get back to many guys who just threw the ball hard. But in order to be a pitcher, you've got to think both sides of the plate, up and down in the strike zone. But we don't have that today. You know, throw as hard as you can, as long as you can, and in the fifth or sixth inning, we'll pull you out of the game. Nobody has the idea of finishing a game today. Oh,
no.
Never.
No.
Never.
Mm-mm.
You know, if I give you five, six innings, that's a quality start. Give me a break.
Yeah.
What is quality start for Bob Gibson or Don Drysdale, Sandy Koufax or Whitey Ford? Come on. What are we selling the public? That's what bothers me the most. We're selling the public garbage, absolute garbage with these pitchers. And you look around,
Billy,
no, he can't pitch. Go ahead.
We've seen Bob Boone's play in Philadelphia. We've seen Aaron Boone's play now with the Yankees, and a little short note in the New York Post 2 days ago that the Yankees are keeping the analytics. They're bringing some new people in, but they're going to have a guy now on the bench and helping the coach for the manager. Now we got a manager, we got a coach for the managers. Now we're going to have an analytics man next to them so he can tell them what to do. So,
well,
this is a hot seat for Boone. He's got to win this year.
Who won the World Series this year?
Who do I think's going? Oh, I don't think it's
any. Who won the World Series last year in 2023?
One of your guys that never uses analytics.
Yeah. 2023, he came in. He said, look, to Chris Young, the general manager, I know this for a fact. Numbers are important. I'll look at the numbers, but I'm going to manage from my gut. Do you think he would tolerate some jerk standing next to him with a computer saying, oh, Aaron, you got to do this, you got to do that? He'd get that computer and knock him over the head with it. All right?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
he didn't use any.
He may have used the information, but he never used them as an example of how he should manage a club. The guy's in the World Series. What are you talking about?
Right.
Who's managed the World Series more than he has?
Aubrey Hutch made the greatest statement of all time concerning Bruce Bochy. We let a Hall of Fame manager go, and we hired Gabe Kapler.
Yeah, right.
That's enough
said.
Enough said.
Right. Go ahead, Bill.
He ran that team right in the ground, Gabe Kapler. Like he did with the Phillies.
He never did get over
the hump.
Nope. You're exactly right.
He's a general manager somewhere. You know, they love these guys who look at those numbers. Look at those numbers. Oh, look at those numbers. Well, a guy proved that you don't have to look at the numbers every 2 seconds.
I'd like to have been sitting there when that analytics man sat down with the Mets and said, well, you had a player last night that had two doubles and a triple, and you ought to sit him tonight because he's probably a little tired from running the bases. Now, how would you like them in Showalter when that lunatic came in and told you something like that?
Well, first of all, Showalter should have never let them in the office. And secondly, he should have punched them right in the mouth.
Right.
But, you know, look, there's a great story about analytics when Torrey managed the Yankees. They came down with a lineup one day and they said, have Jeter bat ninth. Derek Jeter batting ninth.
Roger, you're up.
Along the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Yeah.
Please,
let's
get
rid
of these
people.
That.
Bill, to what Don was saying about the Yankees having a guy on the bench, I think what they're going to do is bring back to life Mr. Rivets that was on Scott and the Mechanical Man, and they'll have him sitting on the
channel
bench.
Channel 10, yes, I remember that. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I love the game of baseball, but I don't want to hear the velocity, you know, off the bat. I don't want to hear the velocity 99 miles an hour. I don't care about that. Can the guy pitch? Can the guy pitch? You know, and so many times they lose sight of the fact you have to develop pitchers. They got to get through a growing pain. But they don't do that. And also, it filters down to the parents today. They send them these baseball camps. Go as hard as you can, hard as you can. Could you be in the big leagues or you'll get a scholarship to college? Parents are at fault, too.
Bill, you're exactly right. I've been to a number of high school games down here in the last week and a half. And, we talked about it the other night because a friend of mine, we've had him on. His son's a really good pitcher. And he had a serious health issue because he got hit flush in the eye back in May by a 90-mile-an-hour hit. But he's recovered. But the thing is, they talk about, okay, well, how many innings in JV can he pitch? And how many innings in varsity can he pitch? And this is exactly what we've talked about with all these travel leagues, where a kid is, he's got his limit in, like, Babe Ruth, but then he's playing in a travel league, and it doesn't have any bearing on what he pitched in Babe Ruth league game.
You're right. You're right, Roger. It's unbelievable. I mean, again, the parents are looking, my kid's going to be the next Jacob DeGrom. My kid's going to be the next Matt Scherzer. Well, let the kid be a kid and let the kid develop as a pitcher. He doesn't have to throw 90 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. And that's the problem with the baseball scouting today. They're getting rid of so many great scouts and because they think it's cost-effective to have these analytics people. They have absolutely ruined the game of baseball, and they've ruined every other sport. They have
You can put Boris right here with them, Billy. Boris has ruined it as much as they have.
He sure has.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Here's the problem with the owners. The owners, he will not talk to a general manager when he has a big-time client. It goes right to the owner. I'm a general manager. I'm going to say, wait a minute. Hold the phone. I'm the general manager. You hired me to be the general manager. You're not negotiating with Scott Boras. Scott Boras has a way of having a team bid against themselves, and he's done it over and over again.
And that's why he's made the money, and these players have what he's doing now with Harper, trying to get an extension because it was great at the time, but now he wants more. I hope they do not do anything with Harper's contract.
Well, he's got 8 years left of the contract. Look, Harper could have signed a contract like Cody Bellinger with somebody else. I think George Beeney would have had a problem with that contract. I mean, he had so many outs in that contract. Harper could have signed the same type of contract, 4 years. I can opt out. But Machado had a contract. He could opt out there for 3 years in San Diego. So, I mean,
Bellinger just did that in Chicago. He can opt out. He's got a 3-year deal, but he can opt out at the end of the first year or the second year.
Absolutely. No question about it.
But that way
I'm going to tell you another thing right now. We're entering a very dangerous era in sports television, especially. Because a lot of things are going to go to Peacock, Apple, Amazon. You're going to pay more money to watch sports. And many of these cable outlets that have sports networks in different cities. I think Bally's had 11 of their outlets have a bankruptcy problem. 11.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And Major League Baseball had to jump in and save their bacon. I'm going to tell you something. We're in a very, very dangerous era right now. And I think the bubble could burst, and it could leave a lot of people in very, very tough financial straits.
Well,
Billy, I want to thank you very much, Billy. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And as I said at the top when you first came
you
on.
You told Roger, Donald. I heard Roger called me and said, Don hates having you on the radio. just does not like it at all. And Roger said, I don't know why. I said, well, that's Don, you know. He'll pat me on the back and then He'll throw me under the bus.
Just give me your call spiel so people can listen in all around the country and maybe they'll get some misinformation.
WCHE 95.3 on the FM dial. WCHE 1520 on the AM dial. 95.3 WCHE worldwide. And you always can follow me on Twitter, the Werndl, WERNDL. Gentlemen, have a great night.
You too.
Bill, you're always
the
best. Always the best. And we have a great time, whether I'm on your show or you're on ours. Always great to have you on, and we'll do it again in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Donnie.
Take care.
All right.
Take care, Bill. Hey, Don. Let me just say one thing before we go any further. I want to do a shout out. Locally here, the North Forsyth girls basketball team is now two wins away from the state championship in the top level. And I've been to games all last week, three games, including last night. And they played this private school from Atlanta. There's one branch that's down by the airport, Woodward Academy, I'm sorry. And I got to tell you, this is the best high school girls basketball team I have ever seen. I mean, the defense that they play, and they are a team. They do have a couple of juniors that are definitely going to go Division I, you know, after next year. One girl who's the center, 6'2". Her name's Lindsay Pridger, and she's really does a heck of a job. But I did want to give them a shout out locally, and anybody in the Atlanta area, you know, they're reading about it. They're going to be taking a long trip to play on Saturday, almost at the Alabama border. And that's the next, if they win that game, they're in the state championship final, and who knows. But I just wanted to give them a shout-out.
Okay, we got that one in. Steve Caselli's been waiting quite patiently on the line. No one has a finger on the pulse of baseball like Steve Caselli.
No, nobody.
Now, were you one of the ones that gave – Mr. Showalter, that information about a player who had gotten a triple and two doubles to sit on the bench the next day because he may be tired. Were you in that group?
No, actually, it was the, as Buck told you, it was the player that came to him. It wasn't a hypothetical. It was a real thing that a player came to him. And, that's happened before. I mean, you've seen guys that have amazing games, and then the next day they're on the bench, and everybody thinks it's the manager that made the call. But sometimes the player actually says, "Oh, I'm a little tired from running the bases," and whatever. you guys know me and Buck are very, 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 or I should say, I'm a very much a big Buck fan. I'm not sure how much he thinks of me.
We always start somewhere else, but let's start with the local club. Let's start with Tampa, because the Rays right now are in a quandary about their shortstop that may never play again or may only not play this year or whatever. How do you see the Rays getting around all these problems they have right now off the field as well as on the field?
Well, I have no comment on the other situation. We still don't know anything other than what one side has said, so I'm not going to even comment on that. It's not the Rays at shortstop. They're very deep. They're very stacked. It's not really an issue. You can't replace the production that was there last year. that's like trying to replace a Trey Turner or a Corey Seager or someone like that. But when you look at what the Rays do have, instead of saying, you know, let's look at what the Rays don't have, the Rays have got more bats than they know what to do with all over the diamond. And if you can get good defense at shortstop, or in center field, or a catcher, the three areas that I'm very big on, you can go with a softer bat at one position. Jose Caballeros played second base last year in Seattle because J.P. Crawford's at short. He's going to get the shot at shortstop. Very good contact bat, doesn't strike out much. Stole 23 bases in 26 attempts as a rookie, and he was burned out by the end of the year because he had been injured the previous 3 years. and was really barely has any minor league experience. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to go with Jose Caballeros, and then they'll mix Amá Rosario in. They have a kid named Aslivas Basabe. They can always move Curtis Mead over to shortstop, and they can also, you know, there's this kid who's the number three prospect in baseball that can play shortstop, named Junior Caminero. You know, hasn't played a lot of shortstop in the minors, but he's only 21 years old, and he's played the position in the minors. So, you know, the Rays have got more bats than they know what to do with on the offensive side of the ball. For once, that's really not the concern for the Rays.
I was going to say, that's just the opposite of all the years we talked. We always said, where are they going to get the runs from? Now they're going to get the runs. We'll see whether they get the pitching. I'll get back to that in a second, but let me get Roger in here for a question on some of the things he wants to talk about.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things we talked about, Steve. You know, there's a one rumor about the Phillies making a deal for the Houston pitcher and having to give up, you know, one or two prospects, which I'm totally against, especially if it's Justin Crawford. But I was just wondering, you're down there. I'm sure you've been to some spring training games. Any team in particular that you have seen that really impresses you, that could be a surprise team in the season?
Well, I haven't seen them personally, but the one team that I'm glad you asked that, the one team that I'm most interested in is San Diego. A lot of baseball pundits and a lot of people look at what a team loses from one year to the next. And then if you lose these players, you look to who did you sign to replace them. And San Diego didn't go out and sign a bunch of guys. They traded Juan Soto. They lost Michael Wacha. They lost Blake Snell. they lost Josh Hader. I mean, if you make a ledger of what the Padres lost, you would say this is a rebuilding team. And they're looking forward to a couple years from now, especially with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks in that division. I tend to look at the team as a very talented team with Cronenworth and Awesome Kim and Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts. And I say, okay, they've got the base of offense, and they've got some really exciting arms that they picked up from the Yankees to go along with Musgrove and Darvish, and they've got an outstanding bullpen. So let's kind of keep an eye on San Diego. Everybody would think that they would be down this year and taking a step back, but I'm one that's thinking I'm a little bit intrigued. So let's just say that's my most intriguing team.
Great.
Nobody keeps stats better than you do. How about the two pitchers that have not been signed as yet, which is a little bit of a surprise to me because so many teams need, you know, lead off. You know, even if you don't say they're number one, you come off as a Cy Young year, you should be considered a number one. But even if you don't even consider them a number one, where do you go? I mean, I can't believe they're not being signed.
Well, it's just, you know, let's not get crazy on the Cy Young. Rick Porcello won a Cy Young, and he wasn't a sought-after pitcher later in his career. Even the next couple of years, he wasn't that good. Blake Snell, I could tell you why Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery haven't been signed. It's pretty obvious. Why on the earth would you sign a guy that's 31 years old, start with Blake Snell, that's only got two years of 160 innings or more, basically is 130 to 135 inning pitcher? Last year, he led the National League or all of baseball in walks per nine innings. He's got a spotted record. He has a Cy Young in Tampa Bay, then two kind of subpar injured years in San Diego, then the Cy Young in San Diego, and the 2 years prior to winning the Cy in Tampa Bay, same thing, 22, 23 starts, IL stints, and very production. So you look at Blake Snell, and yeah, you know, if you want to buy a Cy Young, it's the dumbest thing you could do if you're a team and say, hey, I'll give you 7 years, $175 million, because you have a couple Cy Young. Well, no, he's 31 years old. You don't want that dead money and that risk on your books. Similarly, right, you don't want to pay Jordan Montgomery based on what he did in the playoffs. You got to look at his full body of work, turning the corner of age 30, 31. You know, maybe give him a couple more years of that playoff-type experience. What you're buying is a playoff experience, and I don't blame Boris for trying to get it, you know, but both of those guys have what I call warts, and I'm not signing them to long-term deals. Their agent's holding out for long-term deals, and now you're going to start seeing the guys, okay, we'll do the same thing that Bellinger did, another guy that's got a very spotted history that I don't buy into last year and give him 7 years. You know, they just did the same thing that they did with Marcus Stroman, who came off a pretty good year and did the same contract, basically 3 years with an opt-out after the first and second year. with a little bit higher salary in the first 2 years, and that's what he did with the Cubs. But, yeah, these pitchers, you know, when you're dealing with Scott Boras, he knows he has a short-term deal in the bag all the way into March. So he's going to hold out for the long-term deal. You would think if you were going to risk some money, it would be a team like the Giants who need pitching and the Rangers that need pitching, especially with Scherzer and DeGrom both being out.
Well, they said the Red Sox yesterday. They thought the Red Sox were going to make a move.
Boston might make a move, but that's not going to move there. If I was Boston, I would just follow the path that they're on, try to get rid of Kenley Jansen and try to move off Chris Martin and try to flip that team over between this year and next. And, you know, if you get lucky with a couple of your young kids, if Brian Bello makes a step forward and a few other guys can make the step forward in that rotation and the offense can produce, well, we'll see what we got around the trade deadline. But I'm not going to hamstring myself with seven-year deals to Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery. Maybe a three-year deal, maybe four, but that's about it. That would take you to your 34, 35-year season for a pitcher. And unless you – there's very few pitchers after age 35 that have really wowed us.
Steve Cassell, our guest this segment of the program. And, Steve, it's always a pleasure. And, Roger, you're up.
Well, Steve, I'll tell you, I'm with you about those long-term contracts. And when we were talking about Cody Bellinger, he got, after 1 year, like Don said, 1 year and 2 years of the 3 years, he can opt out. So I like those deals. Yeah. And I think, if you produce, you want out, that's fine. But then the team isn't liable for a lot of money on the long term. And I like those deals.
Well, just to interrupt again about long-term deals, like this Cody Bellinger is not the example to use as somebody that got this deal. We can go back a couple years, Carlos Correa signing a one-year deal with the Twins with an opt-out and then took the opt-out. And then, of course, he went through the sign with San Francisco to the huge deal, but then he had the failed physical. The Mets were interested, but the physical issue, and then he signed the long-term deal with the Twins. But if you remember, his first deal with the Twins was a two-year or three-year deal with an opt-out after the first year. He did very well, and he opted out, and he landed the big contract. So, you know, if you're going to have dead money on your books, you probably want to have it on a more susceptible, you know, guy that has a lineage of producing every year. As you guys know, at Philly, you got Trey Turner and Bryce Harper. When they're 38, 39, you might have some dead money on the books, but you're probably going to get good production from them through most of the contract.
Steve, you know, I always get around to the Mets and the Yankees when I'm talking to you, and let's go to the Mets first. Cohen has said he's not going to go dipping in there. Of course, they're up against the cap, but they're way over the cap still, and so are the Yankees. I don't know how the Yankees could sign anybody else, but two-fold question. What do you think, and how do you think the Yankees and Mets stand right now? And number two, is Boone have to win this year to stay?
Yeah, I keep saying that Boone is on the hot seat, you know, and you guys know from talking to me for years, I generally don't blame managers unless there's an issue in the dugout with the players not performing and doing something that's just, you know, doesn't look good. You know, you could see sometimes when a manager loses control. I don't know how to say it. It's like, you know, what's pornography? I know it when I see it. You know, what's a bad manager? You know it when you see it. That's the best I can say. But, you would think it's going to come down to the Yankees. It comes down to the health of that starting staff. Say Gerrit Cole's his normal, talk about a big contract. We have a very interesting contract with him at the end of the year, if you guys want to talk about that. But say you get your normal 200 innings out of Gerrit Cole. Well, you need Carlos Rodon to bounce back. You talk about a long-term contract based on one healthy season. There's Carlos Rodon, and that probably scared a lot of people off of a Blake Snell. You got Carlos Rodon. You got Nestor Cortes, who was injured almost all of last year. You know, they signed Marcus Stroman, who also the last 2 years has spent time on the IL. And then the young kid, Clark Schmidt, is very talented, but I think he needs an opportunity. Now, the key to all that is if you start losing guys, you know, if you start losing those pitchers, you're in a lot of trouble. There's not a lot of minor league depth coming up. They're a team on a short-term deal that would look good for Blake Snell, you know, to fill one of those roles to give a little more depth to everything. But that's how
can
I see
afford them.
The offense. Yeah, I see the Yankees' offense with Soto and the kid Verdugo from Boston with Aaron Judge, with a healthy Giancarlo Stanton, which is also another variable. Last year, guys, if you guys remember the disaster that was Anthony Rizzo with the concussion syndrome that he didn't know he had, I was at Tropicana Field. I remember telling a friend of mine, I said, this is not normal. He looks horrible. He reminded me of a guy named Andre Thornton when I watched him when he was like 40 years old, and it was really sad to watch, you know, or watching, you know, watching Ali against the ropes against Larry Holmes, and it was sad. You know, it was one of those, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Rizzo was
right.
So bad. And then it turned out he had the concussion issue. He's a damn good hitter, as we all know. You know, so if you get Rizzo turned back around, you got Gleyber Torres, you've got Volpe, and you've got DJ LeMahieu, you've got a really nice offense, and the key is going to be staying healthy. The Mets are already dealing with health issues. I mean, how do we – I mean, again, you know, last year was Verlander, Quintana, and Scherzer all got dinged up and banged up, and this year they've already lost Kota Senga, who gave them 160 innings last year. Who knows when he's going to get back? Now their opening day pitcher is Jose Quintana this year. So they've got a lot – they're in a little bit of a quandary. You know, they got the Pete Alonso free agency coming up. Now there's a guy that's going to get paid. He has a track record of success and, you know, very, very attractive free agent coming up. But they got a lot of questions they need to answer. The good thing about the Mets is they hoarded prospects, and they're ready to turn over to the Brett Beatties and the Francisco Alvarezes and a few other guys. They're ready to give them the opportunity. So that could be a team in the National League that could surprise. A lot of people focus on what they lost and what they don't have, but they do have some very exciting kids.
Roger?
Yeah, that's good to know because you're right. I mean, and the pitchers, like you're talking to Bill Warndell, the Phillies have five starters. But the thing is, are those five starters going to last through the season? I mean, you know, Nolan Wheeler do a pretty good job, and Suarez,
mm-hmm.
he was hurt last
mm-hmm.
year. But you just don't know. I mean, because it's
yeah.
like Bill said, you throw as hard as you can for as long as you can, and then the arm goes.
Yeah. Yeah, the Phillies, to me, are another very interesting team. I like the offense. I like the nine. I like the position players and the DH. I think that's pretty good. I am a little concerned about the depth on the bench. You know, Whit Merrifield can go in and alleviate some of that, but I look out there, I see Michael A. Taylor, I see Adam Duvall, and I see Michael A. Taylor, and I say that's a perfect bench player for the Phillies. In the rotation, you can push Christopher Sanchez into the bullpen and go with the Blake Snell if you can get him on a short-term deal, or more fittingly to me, because he's more durable, would be a Jordan Montgomery on one of those short-term deals, pushing Sanchez back into depth. I do like Christopher Sanchez, you know, former Ray prospect that was dealt for Curtis Meade into a nice little arm there. But, like when I look at the Phillies, I say they're one bench piece away that I think would provide a little more depth than what they have. And I also think they're one starting pitcher for depth. I'm not sure. Can you guys let me know, because this is in the back of my mind, is Nick Abel with you guys or is he gone?
No. He's there. Okay.
Okay,
and he's on I think he's on the roster, but he's been in spring training. Yeah, and that's the one that if anything happened to the starters, you know, he's
okay.
Probably the first one up.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure. I know his star had fallen a little bit, and I kind of lost track of him.
Right.
I wasn't sure what his situation was. I know there was another guy that went down with the TJ last year. I'm trying to remember his name.
He's out all year. He's the superstar. Okay.
Okay.
They're looking at him at
you talking about Painter?
Time. Who?
Painter? Who are you talking
Painter.
About?
Yeah, Painter. Yeah,
Andrew Painter, right?
Andrew Painter, yeah. And
okay. I thought that's who you're talking about.
What they're looking at is Steve. That this time next year, he will be in the starting rotation. That's why he had the surgery, the Tommy John, but they are not going to be using him at all this year, unless, for instance, a miracle happens.
Steve, last question before we end this segment. Did you have a chance to see Yamamoto this afternoon in a couple innings he pitched for the Dodgers?
I saw the highlights. Outstanding. I mean, I think we can all go to use the word electric. And until I hear somebody else describe him in any other way, we'll just say the guy's electric. He really does look fantastic.
Did you get a kick out when he recorded the third out of the inning? He didn't realize it was 3-0 and turned his back and was walking back. And the bench sort of got all over him. I thought that was – you don't usually see Asian players smile and laugh. He had a laugh at himself. I thought that was great.
Yeah, he's a fantastic pitcher. One of the rare fireballers that's come over from Japan. I mean, there's Ohtani, of course, but this guy is something special. And the guy behind him, Roki Sasaki, is the next one in line. That's just absolutely electric as well. So, good times to be a Japanese hurler.
Well, Steve, thank you very much again. As always, we'll get you in a few weeks as the season gets underway and have you evaluate these teams for us and see who you think is going to move up or who's going to move down after we see a little more of spring training. But thank you very, very much.
Steve, we always
absolutely
appreciate it. You're
the
best. Take care.
All right, thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Trevor Basso is on the line right now. We're going to switch back to football. It's not football season in the National Football League. But it is football season in the USL and FL, and it's going to be getting soon underway quite soon. So, Trevor, give us an idea where the league stands right now and who do you have on there with you?
I definitely have a lot to talk about in a sense of training camp kicked off. I believe it was 3 days ago. Everyone looks really good, ready to go. Under Armour's doing all the uniforms for the teams. Some teams might even get different uniforms from last year, so that's something that we could look at. And I know a lot of people like that aspect of the springtime football, is that the brands kind of tend to change and they'll listen to fans in that regard, like what looks bad, what looks good. But in terms of some player acquisitions, I got a couple of names I'd like to shout out there. The Birmingham Stallions picked up defensive end Hercules Matafa. He played 2 years with the New Jersey Generals. He was very good for them. The D.C. Defenders picked up Chauncey Rivers, a defensive end, played at Mississippi State. The Houston Roughnecks picked up Cam Carter, offensive tackle from Murray State. The Memphis Showboats picked up James Tunstall. Excuse me if I butchered your last name, my Ben. But he's an offensive tackle from Cincinnati. Not the Bengals, but the Cincinnati Bobcats, I believe. And then San Antonio picked up a couple guys, Kalichi A, and then Sam Tecklenburg. One's an inside linebacker from Incarnate Word, and the other is a center from Baylor. I will say this about San Antonio, is they've made the biggest splash in terms of, you know, pre-training camp acquisitions. They've picked up a lot of guys, and Wade Phillips being the head coach there now, they did get rid of Hines Ward after his very subpar first season with San Antonio last year. But Wade Phillips is going to bring that energy and that he wants those veteran guys. He wants those high IQ players. So I think San Antonio, the Brahmas, are going to be a team to look out for, a sleeper pick to represent the XFL conference in the championship game, in my personal opinion. But the favored right now, it's probably got to be hands down the DC Defenders. Throughout social media, you know, everyone's kind of getting the gist. This team is ready to win now. Jordan Te'amu coming back is the quarterback, one of the most esteemed springtime quarterbacks probably of all time. Very athletic guy, had no offers out of high school, played at Ole Miss, but, a guy that I believe could actually be a high-quality backup in the NFL. He's getting up there in age, but genuinely in terms of springtime ball, he does elevate the rosters around him. They brought in the Defenders brought in wide receiver Kiki Kuti, played for the Houston Texans, actually played with Deshaun Watson. You know, despite what you think about the guy, you know, he actually played with what some would consider a high value star. I don't know about now with the Browns, but that's neither here nor there. They're actually acquiring names, talent, and NFL, you know, names. And it's good. It's good. The quality and the roster quality is definitely looking like it's going to be one of the harder things to do is to make the final 50, obviously, but each team having 75 guys going into training camp, it's going to be really hard to let some of these guys go regardless. I mean, everyone in my personal lives is definitely a valuable asset, but there's going to be those cuts that will surprise us and some that won't. But in terms of the USFL conference, I think the outright favorite is the Birmingham Stallions. But a team that, you know, I'm looking at right now and I'm seeing some more faith as I, you know, look at the roster, seeing more videos come out of training camp, is the Memphis Showboats. Case Cookis, Troy Williams, and Cole Kelly. That's a really good quarterback room. And then they also recently picked up running back Trey Williams, a guy that played 2 years with Darius Victor for the New Jersey Generals. They had probably the best rush attack 2 years in a row for the USFL. But in my personal opinion, I think that maybe the Memphis Showboats could maybe upset the Stallions and maybe upset, you know, what a lot of people think will be a three-peat from the Birmingham Stallions. But I still believe that I have to be shown that. You know, I'm not going to say that now and until I actually see it to believe it, because the Stallions have been unbelievable, only losing 3 games in 22, I believe, games total. So definitely – no, actually 24, because 12 total weeks of football in the USFL season. So 3 games out of 24, so 21-3. That's pretty impressive from Skip Holtz. So I did also want to mention that I was able to interview Joshua Simmons, all USFL kick returner, and we were able to talk to him. Caden and Brandon and I sat down with him, not in person, but over Zoom, because he's a Houston native, but we were able to talk to him, and he was a leading kickoff return yard leader in 2023 for the Pittsburgh Maulers, a team that did make the championship game. We were able to talk to him. Just wanted to shout that out. If you guys want to go watch that on YouTube, it's under Tee Time Reports. Just check that out for yourself.
Oh, that's great. Roger. That's great. Let me ask you about Jerron Vincent, Troy Vincent's son. I mentioned he was in San Antonio, wasn't he? And I assume he's still there since they're in training camp. Or was it Birmingham? Do you know offhand?
What was his name? I'm sorry.
Jerron Vincent. He's the defensive tackle out of Ohio State. He's Troy Vincent's
son. And he went through high school here in Brayden,
yeah,
the Academy.
IMG. Yeah.
IMG Academy. That's where he went to high school.
Yeah.
I'm not sure by off the top of my head, because I do know that the San Antonio Brahmas did actually release about 20 guys off their roster. So I don't know by chance, but there's a good chance that, you know, he did make, you know, training camp. A lot of those guys were protected under contract and stuff like that. But now San Antonio is definitely going to be a really fun team to watch, obviously, with NFL caliber coaching, as well as the fact that they did upgrade their quarterback room. We talked about Joe Flacco's little brother, Tom Flacco. So that's going to be something interesting to watch.
Yeah, he's
Roger, where
does
his dad? Where is his dad staying now in the National Football League?
His father's the executive VP of operations for the NFL.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's
what
I thought.
And he was with the Rams last year, and then he was with the Houston Roughnecks, but he is with the San Antonio Brahmas. So that answers that question.
Go to it, Roger.
Yeah, 6'1", 305, defensive tackle out of the IMG Academy in Ohio State. So, Trevor, from you are very high on the Brahmas, right?
Yeah, they had a really horrible season last year, and it was mainly because of coaching and quarterback play with Jack Cohn. If you're a Notre Dame fan, I'm sure you know the name, but he is not a good quarterback. They struggled with that, and they struggled with pretty much every facet of the game, to tell you the truth. But now with the revamped coach, who brought in an entire pretty much new roster, it's going to pretty much change how I think about the Brahmas, because the UFL needs San Antonio to have a good football team. I'm not saying it's rigged or forced, but that's the reason they got Hines Ward out of there. They replaced him with someone that's more experienced in this matter. Hines Ward's a great guy, a great player in the league, but Wade Phillips has so much more experience on managing a team, and it'll automatically come with more success. I think they're going to be a team that's going to definitely at least push to make the playoffs, But with what we saw out of Arlington making the playoffs at 4-6 last year in the XFL season and winning the championship game, I just don't know, and I'm not counting out the D.C. Defenders. So the San Antonio Brahmas definitely have a fight ahead of them, but I can definitely see them maybe being that sleeper pick for people out there if you're betting, if you're, you know, just trying to find a team to enjoy and watch. They're definitely going to be one of the underdog stories of the season. But I did, you know, say this on my Twitter, and I'm like, you know what, I was like, you know, a bold take, the Brahmas are going to the championship game. I could see it happening. I really could. I mean, they've revamped literally everything about the team. So it's one of those things where they could, you know, completely pull a 180 and get to the championship game.
Trevor, two quick questions. One, when's the first kickoff? And how many games are they? Is it going to be like two games on Sunday or one game on Saturday, two games on Sunday? What's the TV schedule going to be like?
Well, it's looking like it's going to be two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday, just like typically the USFL and XFL did last season. But it's also looking like it's going to be a 10-game regular season, as both leagues did last year with the 2 weeks of postseason. Obviously, it's broken down into conference, the USFL conference now and the XFL conference. All the former XFL teams are going to be in the XFL conference. All the former USFL teams are going to be in the USFL conference. You're wondering why the Houston Roughnecks are in there. It's because the Houston Gamblers from the USFL were completely rebranded as the Roughnecks, but with the same roster and coaching staff. So none of those people had to, you know, relocate, look for a new job, or try and get signed in free agency. It's literally the Gamblers, but with the Roughnecks uniforms. And like I said, they're all kind of going towards that Under Armour, you know, similarity, which I enjoy. I think it's going to look good, and we might see some throwbacks of the old Memphis Showboats uniforms or maybe the old Stallions uniforms. I'm liking where it's going in the creative area of the league. But I still got to say, in terms of, you know, who do I think is going to be in the championship game, my realism is kicking in, and I'm going to say the D.C. Defenders and Birmingham Stallions. But in a different reality, I'm going to go the Memphis Showboats and the San Antonio Brahmas.
All right, my boy Trevor, thank you very, very much. Always a pleasure, and you're the only one we know that can keep us up to date on what's happening in the USFL.
He's the
expert,
no doubt about it.
He's a Brett Musburger of the USFL. All right, my boy, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
Take care, Trevor. Good talking to you. Great job.
Mike Zimzak's next, and Mike, a lot of soccer talk right now, but a lot of news down in the Washington area where you are, between you and Doug Hamilton in Baltimore. We can pretty much cover Washington and Baltimore throughout. We just had a conversation with a good friend of mine, Bill Warndell. I'm high on a quarterback for the Commanders, but he is not. Have you got a thought before we go to soccer and some of the other things? You're down there, you see him play all the time. Any thoughts on the quarterback? Do they have to go out and get a quarterback?
My guess would be that they're going to get a quarterback. I think the question is, are they going to take one with the second pick, or are they going to see about trading back in the draft and picking up one a little bit later? But the Adam Peters, the GM, was doing some press availability, and he basically said the quiet part out loud and said that the Commanders are going to be in the market for a new QB. They have the second pick in the draft. Presumably, the Chicago Bears will take Caleb Williams. It is worth noting, Caleb Williams is a local D.C. kid. He went to Our Lady of Good Counsel. He's a local boy, grew up here, played his high school ball here, so coming back home would be enticing to him. He's mentioned that in passing before. But if he goes to Chicago like everybody else, like most people forecast with the number one pick, that leaves the Commanders with likely choosing between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Now, one of the interesting things dealing with Drake May is that he and Sam Howell, the incumbent quarterback for the Washington Commanders, are really, 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 really good friends. Drake May came to UNC and was there for Sam Howell's last season during some of his pre-draft interviews for the media, was talking about how, you know, they talk pretty much weekly. He was just – Sam Howell just went up for the UNC-Duke basketball game. The two of them were out playing golf. So Drake May comes in ostensibly to take Sam Howell's job. That's going to be real awkward. If Drake May comes in, takes the job as the starter, and then has to be benched because, you know, he would be a rookie, and that's not unheard of, and Sam Howell had to go in, that would be really awkward. I kind of get the feeling that if the option were to take Drake May, they might move along from Sam Howell. It's been put out through various sources that they may have had something as high as a third-round pick from the Jets already offered for Sam Howell. And I feel like if they got such an offer before the draft, in the immediate, closer to the draft, I would have to feel like they would take it. Getting a third-round pick for Sam Howell, who was a fifth-round pick, who led the league in interceptions and at times didn't have the look of a serviceable NFL starter. He holds the ball really, really long. He takes a lot of sacks. There were a lot of turnovers. Now, Eric Bieniemy was dropping him back 40, 50 times a game, which as a first-year starter isn't exactly the greatest thing to do. But he just looked overwhelmed. I would say the two best games that he had all season might have been the only two that you saw him in. And those were the two games against the Philadelphia Eagles. And by the end of the season, we kind of saw what the Eagles defense and especially the Eagles secondary looked like. So I don't know how much you actually want to take from those two games. But I would have to agree with Billy. I'm not real big on him, and I also don't think that the Commanders are particularly big on him.
Well, there you go. Roger, you're up.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking is possibly the Commanders and the Bears could flip, and then they the Bears would get a an additional draft pick, something like that, so that they would make sure that they would get the local guy, because I'm big on that. I think that would really solidify the new ownership and get the number one quarterback in the draft. But, you know, there's a lot of speculation now. I don't see why the Jets would make that move. I mean, if they're getting a top-notch quarterback, that's one thing, but they're not. And, you know, give up a third round, maybe they see something, and Joe Douglas, the GM, sees something that nobody else does. Let me ask you a question. I was talking about this with a couple of football coaches friends that I have here the other day. What do you think the story is about Eric Bieniemy? Okay, he didn't get a head coaching job last year. He's now the OC at UCLA. I mean, it's obviously his stock, Mike, is going down.
He did not have a particularly good season with the Commanders. Yes, the offense looked serviceable when for like three quarters, maybe two halves of two separate games when when Jacoby Brissett was in. But otherwise, again, outside of those two games against the Eagles, the offense didn't look particularly good. You have Terry McLaurin, who has been to multiple Pro Bowls and couldn't catch a touchdown. Jahan Dotson, who looked like he was going to progress and then kind of took a step back because he couldn't catch passes. They have a running back in Brian Robinson Jr., who they're very, very, very big on, who was getting no carries. It was just very, very confusing, some of the decision-making, like I said, dropping back Sam Howell so often. Now, I know that they were chasing a lot of games, but even when you're chasing and you're not down that big, sometimes you just got to stick with what works, and they never figured that out. So on the field, it didn't look particularly good. And this was supposed to be the big break. You know, he was in charge of the offense. He was going to be the man. There could be no questions about who called the plays, who installed the offense, what was going on. And
outside of Andy Reid's shadow. Exactly,
yeah.
Right. You're right.
And the product didn't look great. And then there was the off-the-field stuff. Well, not off-the-field stuff, but after stuff, you know, with the players questioning his use of their time, how efficiently they practiced, questioning how he talked to them. There were a lot of guys who felt like he was just not the right coach. Like, he is, reportedly, a really tough guy. He's very hard. He's a yeller. He's a drill sergeant type. But with that, you have to be able to understand, you know, what the players need. Not everybody responds to that sort of authority particularly well. And they were coming from an environment where that didn't necessarily happen. You know, there could be something to be said for the fact that maybe they needed that. But the players just really did not mesh well with the enemy. And you even heard Ron talk about that in the preseason, which at the time seemed a little bit like weird for him to be commenting on how the guy that he just brought in coached, but it might have been a little prescient for him to say, even at that time, sending a message to Eric, like, you got to back off a little bit. You're not with the Chiefs. You got to change your tactics a little bit. And it seemed like, you know, Eric got a little bit more defensive. So I get the feeling that it just more than we've heard, you know, how for so many years we've heard the narrative that he never called his plays.
Yeah.
That he never called his own plays. And that was the reason why he got a job. I'm getting the feeling more and more and more and more that, you know, when he went into the locker room and sort of the conversations that went on behind the scenes when it came to interviewing and hiring him were not always positive, that he may not have been the best interviewer, and the organizations that were looking at him were kind of like reticent to hire him because he was such a, well, you know, such a hard guy.
Authoritarian.
And, yes, he's authoritarian. And not to – this matters. He's a little guy, too. So there's this sense that there's a little bit of little man syndrome in there. And that may have been more of it. And the window dressing was – the way to make it sound palatable was, well, he didn't call his own plays. That's why we didn't hire him. And they didn't want to say that part out loud. Like, yo, look, he's a bit of an a-hole. And we're not sure that that's the type of personality that we want on our coaching staff.
Yeah.
Well, before we run out of time in this segment, let's get to your bailiwick because we haven't had a chance the last couple of weeks to even talk about soccer. We've been so busy with so many of the other sports and things that are happening. MLS, anything you want to talk about MLS or some of the other things?
Let's talk about the fact that the MLS season started last weekend. It was a pretty early start for the season. They've also got teams playing in the Champions Cup, which is the regional tournament for the countries of North and Central America and the Caribbean. The Philadelphia Union had FC Cincinnati. That ended up being a 2-2 draw. Last night they had Saprissa, which is a Central American team, and that ended up being a 3-3 draw, but they will advance. So they are off to a pretty solid start. Up and down the league, we saw, you know, teams getting in an abbreviated preseason and an early start to the season. So it's going to be a while. The transfer window isn't 100% closed yet, so we may still see some new signings. Because as of right now, there really haven't been many big-name signings outside of Luis Suarez going to play with his brother-in-law in Lionel Messi.
The two New York teams play this weekend. Don't they? One on the West Coast,
yes,
and one.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And that'll be, you know, the New York Derby is always an interesting game. It's a little interesting that they have it this early in the season. I think that you might want to let them get a little bit deeper into the season. But I get the feeling that the MLS is thinking that they have – this is one of the good weeks to do some of their showcase games because we're not in NCAA tournament time yet. We're not in NHL and NBA playoff time yet, and there is no football and there's no baseball, so they really kind of have a pretty decent weekend. We're not even really at college basketball, NCAA basketball. It's the last regular season game, but we're not into the conference tournament, so it's a pretty good
right.
time to have some of these marquee matchups. I think throughout the
they got an open window, so this is the time to take advantage of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's more international windows this week, this year because of the Copa America being held here. MLS is going to have to take off for pretty much a month to accommodate the international window. So we're going to have a pretty big break. Part of the reason why we're starting so early in the season. I think that most of the storylines going through the MLS season, all the headlines and all the attention is going to be focused down in Miami. Anything short of basically a clean sweep of all the trophies for Inter Miami will be seen as a failure when you think about the star power on their roster. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if there are times where Inter Miami struggles. Lionel Messi's carrying a chronic knee injury. I don't think that he's going to be able to play every match. I don't think that he's going to be able to play close to every match. And I think that you're going to see some stretches where he doesn't play because he's going to have to take care of his knee. Luis Suarez is in his 30s. Jordi Alba's in his late 30s. Sergio Busquets is in his late 30s, and all of them have lost a certain amount of mobility. So while it looks like a great roster of names on paper, it looks like a great roster that you would want to go see if this was circa 2014 when they all played together in Barcelona, not necessarily 2024 when they're all playing in Miami.
Right.
And
right. Roger, last question, Roger.
Yep, they're a lot older. I wanted to ask you, I wanted Don in there too, because he's, gets checks the post out every day. The Big East tournament's the week after next, isn't it, Don? Yeah, that's what I thought. Not next week, the following week.
No. And, it's still have a week to go.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I think you're right, Mike. You know, with the conference championships coming up, I mean, the best thing they could do is get that early start, get a couple of games on TV or four games, eight games on TV, and then not have to worry about the conflict with because Fox is going to have a lot, and so are the other networks. So it's going to be March Madness coming up.
They were fortunate that the weather throughout most of the country has been kind to them this
mm-hmm.
week and last week and this week, insofar as it wasn't, this wasn't a bad weekend here in the Northeast. Throughout much of the country, it wasn't necessarily a bad weekend. In fact, it was an above-average weekend. I can tell you from experience, going to a Union game in cold weather right after it snows and you're outdoors is not a pleasant experience. When that wind gets whipping in off the river and you're out there and it's in the 20s, it's not a pleasant experience. And when people ask us why we don't play a standard European schedule from August till May, it's because we have a country where it gets cold, and it gets cold for a lot of months.
And windy.
In October and windy, and it gets cold for a lot of months in between October and May.
It's going to be 20 today. It's going to be 20 today in New Jersey, Mike.
Is it really 20?
Yeah,
wow.
Saying, you want to know why we don't do it? It's because it gets cold here, and it gets really, really, really flipping cold in some of these cities
you got that
up
right.
here.
Yeah.
All right, my boy, we got to call. We got to call the segment in this. We got to call this segment to an end. And Mike, we'll get do it again next week and have some new stuff
have
on
a great week.
MLS and all the other things that are happening in the world of soccer.
All right, gentlemen. Great to talk to you as always.
Take care, Mike. Have a great week.
Well, Doug Hamilton up next, our PGA professional. Before we talk about golf, we got to talk a little bit about the only team in football that doesn't have to worry about a quarterback. We've been talking about quarterbacks all night tonight on all different teams, but there's one quarterback we don't have to worry about because Jackson's the MVP, and he's going to be in Baltimore for a long time. Doug, you don't have to worry about anything in the football range.
Doug?
Hello?
Doug?
Don? I'm waiting for Doug. I don't hear anything yet.
No, I don't either.
Our executive producer is probably working on it very quickly to get us all fucked up.
He was there. He was there, and something must have happened because he just it popped off. Let me get him back on.
Okay. Yeah, I hope he didn't have an emergency. I had no idea it was going to be 20 in New Jersey tonight, I'll tell you, because it was 50 here, but when I came out of school, we had just had rain, and we had rain overnight, and it was 50, as I said, but I got to tell you, it was a very cold 50 with the wind.
Well, my son told me at about 5 o'clock, he said it was almost 60 degrees yesterday in New Jersey, but he said it's going down into the 20s tonight. So he wasn't too happy about that.
No, not any fun. No. We'll see
if we get Doug back on again. A couple of things we could touch on, Roger. One I thought which was very, very interesting this week. PGA Tour is now using a different formula during their television broadcasts. And they are now using players that are actually either associated with the tour. I don't have the sheet right in front of me now.
I heard exactly what you're alluding to. I heard that the other day.
And they said, what a great increase in information and fluidity, and how much better the last 2 weeks have been. And now this week is going to be the director of the Ryder Cup, going to be the analyst this week. Is Doug on there now?
Sounds like Doug's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doug, I don't know whether you saw that or not, the change in the analysts on the PGA Tour started really 2 weeks ago. And what a great success it has been, according to the radio and TV people. Have you heard anything about that?
Actually, no. I've been pretty busy here, at the house trying to work through some different PGA stuff on my own, sitting in front of my computer. And I was telling Frank when he patched me in, I found an indoor place, and I've been teaching part-time there during the winter. It's a warehouse, if you will, of a bunch of different simulators. And, I teach 3 days a week, so it's been month of February, so that's, 12? I think I've given 16 lessons in 12 days, which has been nice. I didn't have that opportunity last year, so it should, make a nice transition from outdoors to indoors. I guess technically our season starts March 10th, and then we'll see what the weather does from there.
Well, they say they got a lot of big tournaments coming up, and they were very, very optimistic about this change in format. Mickelson's former caddy for so many years was the guest last week. Now he's been doing it off and on, I think, for either 2 or 3 years. I'm not sure whether it's two or three. But ever since he left Mickelson, I think he's been working part-time for the networks. But they were very enthused about the way he approached the day in and day out over the weekend. So it's nice to hear when some of these guys get some very positive reaction rather than being negative all the time.
Sure. I think, once we get the season going here, I mean, everybody likes to kick off in Hawaii and all the different stuff. And then, I think it gets everybody into that kind of golfing mood when you see people playing golf in warm weather and, you know, moving forward into the changes they made in the tournament season with a decent-sized tournament in March, the players, and then moving forward from there. So, you know, I don't really get too amped up about, you know, the beforehand stuff. Once we get into the majors, then I think it starts to get a little fun at that point in terms of watching golf. But to be honest with you, you know, we've been my son played his first season of basketball, and he's just finished up, and he's geeked up about watching, you know, basketball every now and again, even though the Wizards are terrible. We watched one of their games the other night. I mean, they're awful. And we watch a good bit of hockey here during this time of year. You know, obviously I'm excited about the Orioles. I'm such a dork that, like, I follow their spring training, you know, games.
They scored 12 runs today.
Yeah, didn't they? Oh, well, the good news is that the starter for the Twins, and again, it's only spring training. A lot of these guys are just, you know, starting to throw some live stuff and stretch it out a little bit. But Pablo Lopez is a pretty big-time pitcher that they traded, you know, some good stuff for, and he didn't particularly pitch well last year. But, you know, the Twins, being a smaller market team, have found ways to, you know, get some good players in there, and he's one of them. I'm excited, though. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about you know, Kyle Bradish having his UCL issue, sprain or whatever you call it, as well as John Means being behind schedule with his throwing program. So their starting rotation looks a little thinner than they had hoped it would look. But some of the offensive, Jackson Holliday got his first hit the other day, yesterday I believe it was. Kobe Mayo is a rising prospect, top 30 guy of the 100. Has gotten off to a really good start. So it's been exciting for me to watch and pay attention to what I can, you know, in terms of where they're going. You know, hopefully we can build on a 100-win season from last year and see what happens there.
Roger?
Well, I was just going to say, I think the Orioles will. I wanted to get back to golf because I know the LIV and the PGA still just can't finalize a decent agreement. What do the two of you think about this?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. I think that, you know, I think a lot of this is probably going to have to be litigated in a courtroom. You know, there's a lot of money at stake here. There's a lot of things going on that, as you mentioned, they just can't get on the same page. And whether that had anything to do with the Saudi-backed money and they didn't like where that was coming from, or, you know, LIV and PGA Tour are obviously two different entities that play by different rules and different formats and different all kinds of stuff. So I don't know if that's a sticking point. It could be, you know, the good old boys club of the PGA that just kind of want to be the dominant, you know, dog on the block that gets to pee on the fire hydrant they want to and don't want that other thing to happen. So I don't know. There's a lot going on there.
Well, there was an apology from Rory, which was a little bit surprising to me. He came out so strongly against the fact that moving away from the PGA, and even though his good friend is the leader of the LIV tournament, now he sort of amended his comments a little bit this week. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be a long time because I think it's going to be a lot of court action before this thing actually gets settled, whether the courts are going to even allow them to merge, so we'll have to wait and see on that. Let me ask you another question. Go back to football for a minute, Doug. Mm-hmm. We have a big difference of opinion on the show tonight, Billy Werndell. I sort of put forth that I think the quarterback at Washington has the qualities to be a mainstream quarterback in the National Football League. Now, you're in Baltimore, Washington. You see your team play quite a bit, the Ravens, mm-hmm. but you also see Washington play quite a bit. Some of your thoughts on Hal. What do you think about him?
Well, I mean, I think we're talking about what, Sam Howell?
Howell.
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, I think I don't know the statistics in front of me, but I'm going to guess that he was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL, or let's just overarch it with he was one of the most pressured quarterbacks. You know, he didn't have an outstanding offensive line. He didn't really have a super strong running game. They, you know, Rivera was a defensive-minded football coach, and their defense was pretty good. But outside of Terry McLaurin, they didn't have a whole hell of a lot to throw the ball to, nor did he have a lot of time to throw it. He spent a lot of time running for his life, and he threw a lot of interceptions. And at one point in time, I know that I'm a fantasy football nerd that plays in a league, and at one point in time, I think statistically Sam Howell was probably a top 10 quarterback in fantasy football league, you know, based on his statistics of yards and touchdowns and those sorts of things. It's always the hallmark question that a front office or GM has to ask is, you know, you need a quarterback to win in the National Football League. Is this guy our guy? Because now you're sitting there with the second overall pick. And, you know, as you mentioned, Roger, I had heard you say, do you want to move up one pick and what's that going to cost?
Yeah.
Remember they traded Montez Sweat and they traded Rice and got an additional second and third round picks for them. You know, how are you going to, you know, build your football team? Because even if you sit there at two, there's another North Carolina quarterback, Drake May, I think his name is, who's available. Do you like him? Do you like Jaden Daniels? You know, does Chicago keep Justin Fields and do something else? Do they trade the pick?
There's what I think you get screwed up. I mean, look at what Washington, what the Chicago Bears have done over the last 5 years. I mean, you can't be that bad. I mean, you and I could have come off the street and picked out players that wound up better than what they did.
Well, I mean, look, if you're the Redskins and you're dead set on getting a new quarterback, I mean, what would you give up for Justin Fields? You know, you want to give up a second-round pick for him and keep your number two pick, and, you know, maybe you take Marvin Harrison Jr. Maybe you take – I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of options there. And, you know, this whole scouting combine thing, you pit – you know, all these front office people, GMs, and all these people in one building, and you're going to start having discussions about what's going to happen come draft time, right? So, you know, those cards are going to have to be played at a later date. You know,
unfortunately, the left tackle is not the strong suit this year. I think there are only two or three that they really consider to be top-notch prospects. And But to me, I want to work on left tackle. I want to work on the offensive line, and I want a pass rusher. This stuff of picking quarterbacks every time you turn around in the first three picks or first five picks, how many of them actually make it? How many of them actually do what they think they're going to do? I mean, it takes – I don't know. I'd go the other way myself. I like linemen and pass rushers, and that's where I want to
look. And linebackers.
And linebackers.
Yeah, I mean, you have –
Speedy tackling linebackers.
Right. Well, the draft as it is shaped right now, from what I've heard from different draft gurus, is it's very deep in offensive linemen. There's some good pass rushers, some good corners, D linemen, those sorts of things. It's not very deep in running backs. That's a fact. Once you get past the top, you know, three or so, four quarterbacks. I mean, J.J. McCarthy, I think he throws a nice football, strong arm. You know, I think some team, obviously being a needy team, is going to reach for him. You know, and that's what happens, like the Patriots did for Mac Jones. I mean, that was a reach. You know, and you're going to have a lot of this because it's a quarterback-driven league. And to your point, you know, Don, I think you do build your team offensively and defensively with those lines. You know, the Redskins have a pretty solid defensive line. I mean, they could use some other things, you know, to back end of their defense with corners and safeties, pass rushers. There's a lot of good ones in there. Could you trade back to and, you know, get some more stuff there? They have some surplus of picks, so we'll see. I mean, I don't know how they want to build their team with a new front office.
Yeah, I think it's we just got there. Doug, are you there? Or we get cut off?
No.
Oh, I'm okay.
Here.
Yeah, I know that is deep in linebackers, and it's the draft or the free agent market, as Bill said, is very deep in running backs. Well, I don't think it's too deep in running backs.
You won't even see a running back drafted in the first round.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
So
I don't know whether, because we're after 9 o'clock, I didn't know whether it was TikTok or not.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anything from Rank.
No, getting close.
Yeah, I extended 5 minutes because Doug had a little trouble getting
Great.
Extended it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Doug, what are they saying in Baltimore about the because they, you know, they're low in the first mm-hmm. round and all the rounds.
Yeah.
Any consensus on who they might go after?
Yeah, they always build a solid draft board, and they like to look under every rock and crevice they can find to get some of these, you know, different people. They really scour the market with undrafted free agents and build their list as such. You know, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see the Ravens at pick number 30 trade back, get additional picks, and then still maintain some level of value. They have Eric DaCosta loves draft picks. They love those compensatory picks when people walk, and I think you're going to see somewhat of an overhaul this year on their offensive line. I think Justin Matabike is going to land a fairly big contract, hopefully. They can figure out a way to pay him. They only have two running backs in the running back room. That's a problem. They were discussion that all these good running backs that they may be able to get a Derrick Henry or Josh Jacobs or Saquon Barkley. I don't know which way they're going to go. I mean, they need receivers, so there's a lot there.
Let's switch. Yeah, we haven't had a chance to talk about this. I wanted to do it. We didn't have time, but now we're doing a little extra time from Frank. What do you think about the football, basketball programs now at the college level with everybody jumping? I mean, you look at the coaches now that have stepped back.
Yeah.
I mean, Kelly really surprised me leaving LSU after did that big contract for big money mm-hmm. and saying, look, I'm going to be a defensive coordinator. I mean, back at the college level because – I'm not going to stand for some kid coming in and said, I want $100,000, or they're going to stay playing on your team. I mean, this is getting really crazy.
College sports thereafter will be forever ruined by the NIL money that's either present or not present because of the
right.
concepts of building these programs as such. The transfer portal, although I think is a good thing, also adds an awful lot of chaos to these guys recruiting and trying to build their rosters as such.
But doesn't Congress have to step in and make some changes here to support the colleges?
Sure. I don't know what the regulation, you know, I mean, they regulate everything else. I don't know what that period is for them. But, you know, you look at a team like Maryland who can't pay the money for NIL. Well, how are they going to build a program if, you know, it's like saying the Yankees can spend as much money as they want, but the Orioles can't, you know. So how is that fair for these programs to build their teams and be able to compete?
Right. So, Roger?
Well, I just, you know, my feelings about this, they've got to do something. And because you just can't allow this portal business to be every year, you know, where every year the guy's going to pick up more money and you don't know who you're going to have on your roster, period. Yeah,
the portal.
And,
the portal needs to be justified in terms of the time frame that you can and can't transfer because it doesn't coincide with the recruiting
right,
period as
that's
well.
That's exactly right.
So a guy transfers after, you know, your recruiting season's over, and you're like, oh, crap, I just lost five more people, so now I got to do what?
Yeah.
I got to go back to the portal.
Yeah.
You know, so it's
and, also, and also, Doug, you got to remember one thing, that your coach is standing there, and the kid that you're recruiting, let's say a quarterback at Alabama, and he's got a contract for $500,000 before he even decides
right.
where he's going to go with the bonus money. I mean, the kid with,
sure.
with the boosters. I mean, how can you combat that?
I mean,
well, that's why Saban left. He
absolutely.
That's
why he left.
Continue on
absolutely.
With this nonsense.
For sure.
That's not the way he ran his programs. It's a different world.
Yeah, you'll need a capologist for college sports next, just like you have
yeah,
in the NFL.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the next thing, it'll be down to high schools. How much you're going to play, because I know at some high schools, at Flowery Branch, they used to have families moving because Lee Shaw was such a great quarterback developer that they would move from out of town to the area so that the son could play for Lee Shaw. At Flowery Branch High School, father.
Well, here now in Florida,
you can
go from one high school to another in Florida. Now you don't have to, you don't even have to live in the district. I mean, you can go if you want to go to another school. You can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, see, that's a problem to me. That's another problem. Okay, I mean, it's one thing if your parents are going to move, but what does this kid do if he goes from Tallahassee to Miami or vice versa? You know, you don't know what he's going to get involved in, who he's going to be with. You know, is it relatives? Who? There's just so much. It's a mess. It's a mess, mess, man.
Yes. A tangled web. Well, that's why I asked Doug, because he's a little different area of being down there in the Baltimore, Washington area. We only see it, you know, from the Florida standpoint. And, of course, in Sarasota, all we talk about here is Florida State and Florida. And where they stand, they're coaching USA Today made Florida State. It was in the paper today. Announced what the new contract was for the Florida State coach. And it's $10 million, $10 million, $10 million the first 3 years. And then the fourth year it goes up. Now, you know, that's a lot of money.
I'd like to sign a five-year contract and guaranteed money and get hacked after two and then just ride off into the sunset. I could be crummy for 2 years and leave.
Hey,
and that's exactly
what... for a million.
Well, I haven't seen any newspaper articles or so forth about what Kelly walked away from at LSU, but it had to be a – I think it was like a nine-year contract that he signed when he left Notre Dame, 8 or 9 years. And I don't know what the total number of dollars was. Maybe it wasn't even announced. But my feeling is he walked away from an awful lot of money to go back to the college ranch. I mean, I may be wrong, but I'm waiting to see. They made them announce, as they say, USA Today made them announce what the deal was with Florida State today. It was in the paper. So I'm assuming that they're going to do the same thing with LSU and say, hey, how much did he walk away from here?
Yeah.
Don Kelly was getting $9 million a year plus at LSU.
He was getting $9 million a year.
$9 million a year, yes.
And
do you remember how long it was, Frank? I don't remember.
He had a 10-year contract with him. It was $9 million, and then it went up exponentially over the next 5 years. But he got additional money for getting the postseason and anything he won after that. He got more money.
Wow.
That's a lot of money to walk away from. I mean, unless he made a settlement, they paid him off. I haven't seen any numbers for Kelly yet. I've been watching every day in the paper to see what it is. When he left Notre Dame, I mean, he had a solid job there for a lifetime, if you want to say, but with the LSU for the big money, and now he lasts 2 years. And, of course, he finished up right here in Tampa with his last game.
Yeah, he fouled up with the Alumni Association and the big donors by not winning his season ending as it did, not getting into any postseason bowls other than a cheap one. And so they decided they should part ways.
That's rough sledding there.
What I said about Eric Bieniemy, you know, leaving the pros and going to UCLA as the offensive coordinator.
Well, he's got a mortgage too, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think you have too big a mortgage when you're making $10 million a year.
No.
Right, you learn
to follow up. Don, on the weather up north. I just got a bulletin from Channel 69 that major power outages in that area up in north of Philadelphia, up into the lower Lehigh Valley. Bad, Doug? Are you guys getting
windy
it bad?
All get out. It is whipping. I mean, it is windy. It's gusty.
Yeah.
Frank, as long as we have you on here, let's sweet for that one. Okay, Frank, our executive producer, we'll throw it back to you. Doug, thank you very much for staying the extra time. Roger, always a pleasure. We'll get together next week at 7 o'clock.
God bless. Have a great week.
I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. It was great, great show. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women Patient Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please make sure you let them know that you know they're there. For everyone else, have a great day. We love you, Bob.
We miss you.